Welcome to The Truth in Us Art. Thank you for tuning in for conversations as we explore arts, culture, and community. I am your host, Rob Lee. Today, I'm excited to be in conversation with my next guest, a Chicago-based artist and author who's joining us today to, you know, have a little story with us. Her work is deeply rooted in big feelings, feminism, and pop culture, and she's made waves. Not only has she illustrated for big names like Netflix, Comedy Central, and ESPN, but her unique art has graced the pages of Glamour and Bridget magazines. Celebrated for her Sydney Taylor award-winning graphic memoir, Dancing at the Pity Party, and her beloved children's book, Bodies Are Cool, she's a true innovator in her field. Most recently, she co-authored Are You Mad at Me with her sister, which is a book about childhood anxiety. Again, those big feelings. It is my pleasure to introduce the incredibly talented Tyler Fetter. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on and making the time. And, you know, as I always point out, and because there's, you know, sometimes a video component with this for the listeners out there, it's always great to talk to another bespectacled person.
I started wearing glasses in not eighth grade, when I was eight. So for a long time, I was like the kid with glasses in my class.
I think I beat you by a few years, three. And
oh, you were one of those little babies.
I was. And the glasses were always too big. And my partner makes fun of it. She makes fun of me in two different ways. One, she was like, you were super cute when you had these giant glasses and your little body. I was like, I was never little because I was always the big kid with the glasses. And now the bit is when you take your glasses off, your eyes disappear. I was like, let me live.
Yeah, I always feel like on Scooby-Doo when Velma's glasses would fall off and her face just like looked weird.
Where are my glasses?
I own contacts and I wear them sometimes, but I feel like I look more like me when I have glasses on.
I think glasses are a thing, and they're, you know, I've thought about it as well. I remember thinking about either doing LASIK or thinking about contacts and high astigmatism, all of that, and it's just like, no, this is just part of my face.
Yeah, and, it's fine.
I find that if I'm not wearing them, you know, I've heard this from people who I'm very close with, loved ones, other than the partner who said my eyes disappear. They say I look like I'm a criminal when I don't have glasses on. It's like, why do you look mean? I was like, that's just the way my eyes are. So there you go. There you go. That's just life for me.
Yeah. So,
you know, again, thanking you for coming on. And it's always good to get the referral and the connection. And we were able to chat a little bit. So for those who are undipped, I'd like to start off with the introductory, the softball question, if you will. You see, you're navigating multiple worlds as the author, as the artist. Could you introduce yourself in this multi-hyphenate identity? That's the word that the kids are using, right? Multi-hyphenate.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm a real double threat. I think what I usually say author, illustrator, because I feel like people are used to hearing it that way, even though I feel more like an illustrator author, because illustration was the way that I got into publishing and the writing sort of came in later. So being an artist has been a big part of my identity, like basically as long as I can remember.
So talk about that a bit more. Like, you know, when I think about sort of stuff that I've done, and always, you know, that's the way I connect, I suppose. When I was like very young, like, you know, I've talked about in this podcast before, you know, like maybe I was preordained in doing something similar to this, like leading a conversation, directing a conversation. I was very young and I was an MC for like elementary school. I was like five, again, cute, you know, with giant glasses and just directing like, yes. And next up we're going to have blah, blah, blah. And that terrifies me now, but I think sort of I can always look back at that as one of those early points, or even in high school, being that jerk, you know, I'll be 39 soon. So as we're recording this, I'll be 39 soon. And I would watch wrestling and I would have a microphone and I would talk to people in the third person like I was The Rock. That's high school for me, but that was my earliest podcast recordings. So when you think about that, as far as, you know, illustrator, as far as author, as far as like, you know, someone in, with that creative sensibility, what comes to mind when you think back at, you know, growing up?
Well, one of my like favorite memories of my like identity as an artist is that in elementary school, I want to say maybe like first grade, other kids used to ask me to draw things for them all the time. And like, I loved it because I loved drawing. So like, I didn't care. And I was very shy and I'm still pretty shy, but I was like, you know, that like kind of silent little kid who like hides behind her parents' leg. But a really easy way for me to connect with all these kids in the class was by drawing things for them. And it got so disruptive for the class that the teacher had to like make a blanket announcement to the class, no more asking Tyler to draw things for you. And I was kind of bummed because like it was fun, but I just found other things to draw instead.
That's good. Were you one of those kids that because you enjoyed drawing and illustrating so much that you would just kind of like, I can ace this test, or I could just take this B and I can finish rest of the class drawing? Were you one of those kids?
It definitely wasn't like a conscious decision. I cared a lot about grades and being like a good student and stuff. But part of this, I think, is because I am a late diagnosed ADHD person in my 30s. But like, if you look at my notebooks from middle school, like when we really had to start taking notes in class, it's like three lines of notes and then just like a ton of doodles. Like I just couldn't focus. So there definitely was a lot of drawing happening, probably when it technically wasn't supposed to be happening.
I feel that. I used to get into trouble, actually, because I very similarly, I would sit there. It's like, yeah, I can make some money drawing X-Men for these fools in class. So I would sit there and draw Wolverine. I would take my B, knowing that I was like, you know, smart enough and I retained things. Well, not a, at least then, not a big reader, but I retained things. And I always had like perfect attendance. So I was like, I'm here listening to this lecture or what have you. Uh-huh. And I was like, entrepreneurship, let's figure this out. So I would just draw like, you know, almost like a huckster, like, what is it? Nightmare Alley style. Like, look, man, I got your comics here. Quarter for a comic.
You like open up the trench coat and it's like all lining the inside of it.
It's just all things that now I would get sued for. Like, trench coat. It's like, here's Jack Kirby's best.
So
when you think about sort of, you know, that moment where, you know, the creativity, like, you know, because like I said, you know, I was interested in doodling and these different things, but I got to a point, and again, I mentioned on this podcast, I got to a point where I was like, I really like storytelling. I really like radio. And I remember taking myself, bringing my body, you know, across the street from this job I was at back in the day to go to Best Buy. And I purchased a bunch of audio equipment. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I went over there and did it. And that was one of those moments where I'm in, you know, I made this investment. So for you, when you got to that point, like, hey, I can make a living from this. I can make money from this. I can, you know, spend a lot of time doing this, whatever it might look like. What was that moment where sort of the curiosity turned into more a career, more of like a big chunk of your time and your investment and energy?
The thought of being an artist as like a money making career didn't come until after college. I think I like didn't really have a lot of examples growing up of how drawing can be like a real career. I think when I thought about like a professional artist, I was picturing like Da Vinci or something. Like it just felt like this kind of fantasy career. And so I ended up majoring in radio, TV, and film and took the screenwriting path. So I was like, well, if I can't be creative drawing, then I can be creative writing. But through all of that, I was doing comics for the school newspaper, and I would take like art classes as electives, like just whenever I could. And then when I graduated from college, I went and lived at home for like a little over a year. I was in a pretty bad mental health place. My mom died while I was in college, and I was dealing with a lot of anxiety that like was undiagnosed at that point. So I lived at home and got a data entry job. And from sitting at a desk and doing spreadsheets all day, it like I felt like I was gonna explode. It was like there was nowhere to be creative. So I would like color code my spreadsheets and like try to make them fun. But I ended up just like needing some kind of outlet. So I made a Tumblr and an Etsy shop, and that gradually got more popular. And I was like, oh, wait, this is like a real thing I could do. And it was so exciting. It's like a million times better than typing up invoices into spreadsheets all day.
In
I
trying
respect the people who do that, but man, it's not for me.
and in trying to make it, because I felt that I felt that, like, I had to do the restart. Like, I had the nice job coming out of college, but probably a year in it, I was like, no, I don't really jam with this. The money's good, but I don't really jam with this. And I've always lived this sort of dual lifestyle, this sort of blade thing, daywalker, creative daywalker, where it's like I would use the high paying or the decent paying day job to fund the creative pursuits. So, when I made that decision to go over there and buy this equipment that I did not know how to use, and just kind of dabble and play with it, I was like, I have the money, and I'm not a person, even still, not a person that just throws money at a thing. I was like, I gotta go over this. Where is CNET.com? Is this the right thing? Am I getting the right stuff? And, really thinking about that, but trying to find creative things within the day job, because this is not good. I'm not proud of this, but I'll say I had a marketing job, my first job out of college. And this is when Soulja Boy first came out. And I remember I painted some sunglasses I had, like the ones he wore in the video, with the name of the company. And I was like, I am a joke. And even that, we had a sales training video, and it was this song, I think, by Nickelback called Rockstar. So we did one
Oh, yeah.
called Sales Star, and we had everyone included. I was the producer for it. And so trying to insert some of these creative things into, and this would be a viral video because it went really well, but insert these things into a job that it didn't really fit for that. It wasn't sort of the sexy marketing job. I was more of the marketing analysis kind of guy. So to your point around, like, the outlet, having an outlet for it, it just makes sense. So I remember, putting the podcast on, the first podcast I did, it was current events and pop culture, it's like news and funny stuff. I put it on Podomatic. I think it's defunct now, but put it on Podomatic. And I was like, I just want to do this, and I guess you should put it out there. And that's 2009,
It's amazing how much the internet can work for you in a creative pursuit. I know the internet has all sorts of negative sides. Like, I'm very aware of that. But, like, my entire career, I don't think I would have it, or it would have gone way differently if I wasn't able to just put my art on Tumblr and let people reblog it and have it kind of spread in that exponential kind of way, where like someone shares it with their three followers and each of them shares it with their six followers and whatever. It feels like magic, honestly, because like I'm not seeing them in person. It's like I just upload something and hope for the best.
Just flinging it to the internet. Do your thing. Make it happen.
That's what it feels like. It's like, okay, I'm sending it away. Cross my fingers.
When doing this, when I'm always surprised when people say, "Yo, I listened to this. This was good. Oh, I got something out of this," or "I felt that." I'm like, "Oh, cool. I did that 8 months ago. I don't even remember it, bro. Sorry." No, I remember every interview. It's a curse. But Yeah, it's good. So what I'm interested in here a little bit is well, actually a lot of it, because I like to get into the minutiae. I like to get into how people do what they do. So, creative process, I see illustration, I see writing, I see comedy writing. There's so Second City in here. So let's talk a bit about, how these elements that make up your background, and you even, talked about sort of your degree and what you're studying, how that plays a role in as well. So talk a bit about how all that comes together and what you do these days. Because I'm sure I may have glossed over some things. So please tell me how everything intersects.
So like when I was going into college, that was kind of the time where I had to decide, like, if not a major, at least like a sort of direction I wanted to go in. And I knew that I wanted to do something creative. So I wanted to do something in the School of Communication. There were like a few different majors in that at my college. And to be honest, I looked at the list of communications majors and I found the one that didn't require a public speaking class. And it was radio, TV, and film. We called it RTBF. During like middle school and high school, I'd gotten really into just watching comedy. I loved Whose Line Is It Anyway? I was like obsessed with that show. I got really into Saturday Night Live. And my dad was a big comedy fan, so he told me that I reminded him of Tina Fey. And this was like when she was just starting to be on Weekend Update. And I think he was just like, look, it's a woman with glasses and brown hair, and like she's funny. And I gradually just got like more and more obsessed with her. And 30 Rock came out, and I was like, I want to be Tina Fey. Like, And so in college, like every film teacher I had where I was in a writing class, they all like, it was almost like a punchline, like, yeah, Tyler loves Tina Fey. And then after college, I was in that kind of boat of like flailing and trying to figure out how to like get into the business. And I grew up in the Chicago suburbs and have a lot of family over here. So my dad was like, what do you ever think of taking a class at Second City? Like, maybe that would be fun. And I ended up doing the writing program. So they have an improv program and a writing program, and each of them are like a year long. I think it's like six different classes.
Sure.
And for writing, at the end of the year, you get to put on a show. Like you audition acting and improv students to be in the show, and you like write sketches. And it was so much fun. It was like very nerve-wracking. I mean, like writing something that you think that you hope is funny, and then having to have the class read it and like waiting to see if they laugh or not. It just feels like being naked, like on stage. But at the same time, the feeling of hearing people laugh is like a drug. Like it feels so great. So like doing that show at the end of the year was so much fun. And I had some friends from that class, and we wrote another show that we put up at Second City. And even though I ended up not going into TV writing at this point in my career, I feel like the lessons that I learned there and just like writing and screenwriting in general really translate very well to comics because it's all speech bubbles and stuff. So it's basically like kind of taking a script and putting it on the page in a visual way. And I also like come from a family where, laughing is very important for all of us. After my mom died, we like laughed a lot. We didn't laugh because she died, but it was a really helpful way of like moving through those feelings. So I definitely try to inject at least a little bit of humor in most of the creative work that I do, just because it feels authentic that way.
Thank you. And authenticity is very important, and one of the themes that I think comes up in this, where, I'm shy, which people tell me that I'm not. I was like, I'm absolutely shy. I was like, see me in person. I hide behind trees, but my personality is such that I try to insert my weird, quirky, whatever into it, because that's who I am. And I think that's the thing that people gravitate toward. And I would imagine in, and we're definitely going to go into this a bit deeper in a moment, but I would imagine with some of the themes that you're discussing, those big feelings and feminism, and even your thoughts around like pop culture, kind of show who you are, your sensibilities within it, as they say, scars and all, and bumps and all of those things. And I've joked about it, and I've said on this podcast, so it must be true, that me doing this podcast, being or doing a podcast, and sort of the maturation, doing it for 15 years, I was 24, now 39. You can imagine, like, there's a lot one learns about a person. If someone's really listening, it's like, yo, I remember Rob used to say stuff like this. Now he's just like, let me adjust my tie, and that sort of vibe and that sort of energy. But you get a take on who a person is, and certain things ring true. And I know for the people that I talk to and the people that I admire and I invite on, authenticity is a big thing. Just them being real. If I came off as some like fake dude in some fake suit with fake questions, you could see right through it. You'd be able to see through it quickly. There you go. That's authenticity is a big thing. And I use the bits, I use the comedy, I use some of those things just to kind of get through, the dicier moments, the sadder moments, these moments that, I don't know, like when I look at doing this, I wanted to, I acted out of annoyance, not anger per se, but annoyance. We had a, fruit colored president say really ill things about, my city. And I'm an analyst. I'm a data analyst by day. I was like, you're not talking about the streets, son. You're not talking about the roads. I'm talking about these black people here. You're talking about my people. And when you take those shots at, my city and cities that are like it, I think it's the duty of platforms to disprove that in an authentic way. Not come on here and let's have the very conservative, the public facing conversation. No, let's have the real conversation.
Yeah, I love that. Because there's always like so much more nuance and diversity to any place than what someone might like to think if they're painting it with a broad brush.
Yeah. I mean, I've only been to Illinois. I can't call it Chicago. I refuse. I was in Elgin. So right there, right. And went for a wrestling show. So right there, you're getting all types of details. I just remember, and this is an aside, I just think it's funny. Me and my buddy went to see this show at the Sears, whatever, some Sears Center or what have you. And we're in Elgin. And I was like, oh, this is Bible Thump Land. I don't think these places are real. This is bugged out. And I just remember, because my buddy is more of a county guy, he wanted the, well, they say if you go to Chicago, you got to get deep dish. I was like, I don't know if that's true. So before we get on the flight, we go to get deep dish
Oh, right before a flight.
right before a flight. And we made sure we
A
finished it.
brave choice.
Yeah. And I just looked at him while, because he had the I guess the clear thing, so he's a little further in. He's like, oh yeah, I got the clear. And I'm just looking at him in this line that I don't want to be in, not sure if I'm going to get my plane, because with my stomach of a flutter, and I'm like, regret our friendship right now. I don't think this is a real thing. You wanted this tourist, sort of thing. It's like, you look, I went to Portillo's, I'm happy,
Oh yeah, I love Portillo's.
Yeah, I got to throw some authenticity right there. So I want to tap back in on so flinging things into the internet, right? Like putting something out there that's digital. And I think the majority of what I do is that, and what you were touching on, is sort of this arc. It's over the last, let's say, 5 years or so, putting stuff out there, and it's online mostly. And you were touching, you was like, you haven't done an interview like in person. It's always been in this sort of setup. So is there, in this arc, is there a memorable sort of moment where, you know, it's like, yeah, I did that. Like, where maybe you worked with a client or you worked on a project or just something that was confirmation for you that just felt like it was a hit. Usually for me, it's, I got this interview with someone, like I got Tyler. What am I doing? I'm out here. Yeah.
So fancy.
Double threat.
Man, I think like any time that I've gotten communication from people who have seen my art, that has, it like kind of shakes me into being like, oh yeah, this is a real thing. Cause like with the type of work that I do and publishing and making art and all this stuff, it's like the majority of what it looks like on my end is me sitting at home or at a coffee shop on my iPad drawing or on my computer typing emails or sometimes having Zoom calls, but it's like pretty like limited in terms of who I'm actually interacting with. So it's always such a thrill to actually hear from people who have seen my stuff, because I'm not like there handing people the books or showing them my art. The majority of the time it's people sort of finding it on their own. But I think the most exciting time for me was the first time I ever did the Renegade Craft Fair. This was in, I think, 2015. And I'd never done a craft fair before. I didn't know what to expect at all. And a whole bunch of people came into my booth and were like, I follow you on Instagram. And it was like so jarring and so exciting. I just felt like, oh, you like me, you really like me. And that, I think that kind of feeling like really fuels me to keep going when I start feeling so isolated.
Yeah. Are there any names that like pop up, like that folks might know that you've perhaps worked with or that you've done work for, in that estimation? And as I give you a moment to think on that, it's been guests. It's been some of the guests again, but also I can say a recent thing that, you know, I'm a noticeable dude. I'm 6'4", so I'm a tall dude or have you. And I just remember it was some guy, he was driving. He was like, yo, you truthing this art? He just stopped in the middle of traffic.
Wow.
I was like, yo, you got to be safe out here in these streets, bro. And it was that. But, you know, I'm always like, yeah, I'm just a shy kid that's trying to just figure it out. But sort of that response or even we had this huge like LED board in one of the art districts in Baltimore. It's like 7,500 feet tall, something weird. And I was hosting a panel at a film festival. So I did one of the movies that was having a world premiere. I interviewed the filmmakers and it came out in conjunction. And they pull up wearing their fits. It's this movie called Carpet Cowboys. It's about the carpet industry in Dalton, Georgia. So, you know, we had like this denim Barbie aesthetic going on. It's just a lot of cowboy hats and denim and carpet. That's what was happening. So the filmmakers are in town. They're coming from like LA, New Orleans, and all this stuff. And so they see me, they're like, you're Rob. I can tell you, I see that smile. They say, do you run Baltimore? Because we see you in that huge screen of right above us right now. And I'm like, oh, right. You know, so when I get down or about or feel like, I don't know if I should even be doing this or whatever it might look like, sort of the community component, and as broad as that community might be, just, I feel it right here.
Yeah. It's such an amazing feeling. I feel like connection is just like something that I crave in general. I mean, I think everyone does. It's part of being human. Yeah. So whenever like doing the thing that I love to do can bring that connection to me, it's really a thrill. I had someone, I think this is the only time this has ever happened, but once like deep into COVID, I was at Trader Joe's, and the Trader Joe's near me was where they were like really being intense about everything, and they would only let a certain number of people into the store at a time. So everyone had to wait in the parking garage 6 feet apart from each other in this long, long line that was like moving so slowly. And I was wearing a mask, so it's like you can see this much of my face.
Yeah.
Someone said, "Are you Tyler Fetter?" And I was like, "Yeah." She was like, "I love your stuff." And I was like, "Oh my God, this is crazy." And I mentioned it on Instagram later that day. And she commented and wrote, "That was me."
I really do follow you. And I did not judge what was in your cart. And like, what? That's a question.
Yeah. Man, it's like, I just want to like hang on to that feeling. It's so cool.
It's a great feeling. And but I think in it, when those opportunities come up, it's some of those influences where, you know, I find like it plays maybe a role, not necessarily on the work that we pursue, but maybe how we pursue it. Like, you know, I hear weird things in the background on, you know, me doing this this podcast and how I go about it, and sort of unsolicited, hey, you should interview this person, or why are you talking to these people? It's like, because I want to, and because this is an independent project. And then how did you get this person? Because I reached out and I asked, and I do interesting stuff, I guess, but not being like so on my own, you know, ass that I'm great or whatever. And so, you know, for you, you know, is there like anything like really like huge that comes up? Like, I've had folks in radio industry, I've had folks on TV. Like, there was this dude, do you remember the show Southside? That was it was on HBO Max for a while. It was a comedy based in Chicago, and most of the people were from Chicago. I got one of the showrunners on, one of the actors in the show, and he gave me really good like feedback about sort of doing this, but also he was just like, be nice to everybody. And he's like, look, man, I want to see some Baltimore stuff coming out, man. I want it to happen. And this was right before their last season came out, the third and final season came out. So, and it was just me shooting a shot. And that's up there as far as like, I got a dude that has a show on HBO currently. Or, you know, even when, you know, Baltimore, we had a few shows, Wire and We Own the City. So the day that the announcement was made for We Own the City being turned into a TV show, I was interviewing the guy that authored the book. He got off the phone with HBO and talked to me right after HBO. So it's just like sort of those things and shooting shots.
Yeah. So,
you know, for you, do you have like any scenario that's similar to that? Like, you know, maybe it was like you were working like in a shadow way with some sort of like large entity that we might know, or that just something that just felt really impactful for you in your career trajectory.
Yeah, I've had I've had several celebrities share my art online. Yeah. And that is always like so wild. When I like pretty soon after I started my Etsy shop, maybe a couple years into it, Mindy Kaling bought a print from me. And so I haven't done a lot of like shooting my shot where I'm initially reaching out to someone, that like cold call kind of thing.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll be more comfortable doing that kind of thing in the future. But she bought like one print, and I sent her all this stuff and wrote this long email or not email letter to her, because her mom had just died. And I was like, your mom died, my mom died. Like, and just, I was saying that her work has been such a comfort for me over the years and stuff. And that was like such a cool connection, because like you just never know who's going to see what when it's the internet. Like, everyone has access to the same internet pretty much.
Right. I mean, as I'm looking it up right now, because, you know, I'm based in Baltimore, you know, I see this is from a little while ago, but it's got me. I see this ESPN post right here.
Yeah.
That's so, I think the Ravens and 49ers, that I'm like, hold up.
That was so goofy. I did this freelance project with ESPN around a similar time to when Mindy Kaling bought the thing for me. So it was when I was still making my art on paper and scanning it into the computer instead of doing it all digitally. And I got this offer to do this like Facebook marketing thing for ESPN. And I am not a sports person at all. Like, I never have been. I know nothing about anything. So it was just so ridiculous. I remember Googling touchdown to like, like, I know that that's good, but like,
No sports team.
yeah, go team. I hope all of the players are having fun. I really appreciated the opportunity, but man, there was a time for a while there where I could remember the names of all the teams in the NFL because I had to do like a different illustration for each team. Think all that information has mostly gone out of my head by now, but very cool.
It reminded me there briefly of my partner. We were watching a game. She doesn't care about sports. She's just like, "Kill them, go team." I was like, "Thank you for the support, I guess." I want to kill them. And it's just like she's tiny with like pink hair. It's just like what accounts for a brat doll. Kill them. Is that field goal? It's like that's sure. So I want to switch into themes a bit. As I have in sort of the intro, I see like feminism field, and we talked about that a little bit, and we've dabbled onto that, and obviously pop culture is in here as well. What draws you like to these themes, and like why are they important in sort of your creative work and your art and your writing? Why are they important to you?
Well, when I started putting art on Tumblr, I think I was really trying to find a subject that a lot of people would want to read blogs. So I did primarily like fan art and stuff at the beginning. And then once I got more followers, I felt like I had a little bit more flexibility to try to like bring in some other topics and making like personal, sort of confessional-ish style art was something that just like felt really good to do. And I am in a family with three girls, no boys. So I have naturally a feminist bent. And then my sisters and I have all struggled with varying kinds of eating disorders over the years. And so that was kind of my like entry point into body positivity, like that side of feminism and making art like that just like felt really good. And it got this response that I really liked where people would say like, this is the first time I've seen someone who looks like me drawn where it's not in a negative way. And that kind of spiraled into working on all kinds of diversity. And I mean, I think of like caring about diversity as like a pretty feministy liberal kind of thing.
Liberals, huh?
Yeah, it's just, it's. I think gradually I realized that this is like, at least for now, the kind of space that feels best for me to inhabit online and with my work.
No, it's good, and it's important. And thank you for that, because I think that it isn't something that's covered enough. And I ha recently had a had an interview with another podcaster. It's like just crossing streams, right? But he has an award-winning podcast, and he's talking about stories, sharing stories, and doing interviews with folks who have who are larger people, who are sort of like it's a fat positive podcast. And it's interesting. One of the things that came out is shout out to wait for it. And one of the things that came out of it is sort of, the conversation is folks want to talk about fat people, don't want to talk to fat people, and don't want to have their perspectives covered. And, people, it's, I always get this response as I touched on earlier, like I'm tall, right? But I'm like a 300 pounder, right? And I've dropped some weight, but I've heard so many comments about my aesthetic. I work with an office of all women, and everyone is just, "Oh my God, Rob, you look like you've gotten skinny. You're losing weight." And I'm like, "This is a lot." And with it, generally, I'm conditioned to not care, but I do. But no one is asking me, what do I feel about none of my clothes fit, or how often I have to think about food and so on, and things of that nature. And that's sort of a real thing, but that's on the lower end. And when I'm out there presenting what I'm doing, you touched on coffee shops, earlier, right? Like, working in coffee shops. I had a signature coffee earlier last year, and it was great. It was great. It's like just my face and coffee. It's great. And beans being sold, going to a benefit, all of that stuff. I had a person slide in the DMs and ask me, how much weight have I put on?
Oh my God.
And that was
I
the literally,
don't know why. Okay.
it was literally back to back, like, "Hey, this cool thing had, oh, you're fat." Damn. Thought I was winning for a second.
Yeah. There's
And
something about
yeah.
like knowing that people are like monitoring your appearance is so uncomfortable. Like, even if they feel like they're giving you a compliment, if they're saying you lost weight, people can lose weight for all different reasons, like depression or illness. And just to like assume that it's okay to go around like telling people something about their appearance, even being tall, I feel like I'm not like wildly tall, but I was really tall growing up, and people would not shut up about it, and it made me so uncomfortable. And it's like, why do you need to be saying, "Oh, I feel so small next to you"? Like, what's that accomplishing?
Right. And I joke with people because it's like, you live with it and you know how to cope with it. And every time something gets through the shields, the Star Trek shields, what have you. But generally, I'm like, "Yo, if you need a tree, I can just play a tree. I can just stretch out the arms. You play with it." But at a point, it's, and I think that's why it's so important to have the work, and even, seeing like, where your work has gone to, like, your book Bodies Are Cool, Bodtober, shout out to that as well, on the Instagram series, and seeing sort of that inspiration around that, it seems like it all connects.
Yeah, there's something really special for me about like finding different combinations of physical features that you don't usually see portrayed and like putting it onto paper in a really loving way. Like, I like to draw every body type wearing equally cool clothes and looking like equally happy and having fun. And like, I'm one person, but it's a good feeling to know that like in the space that I've created of just like my little corner of the internet, that that's a place where people can know that all bodies are good bodies.
So, and because I want to be a good host, give the folks like a taste of what both of those are, respectively. Bodies Are Cool and Bodtober. Like, I'm out here following, I'm out here observing. I need to see, Bodies Are Cool too, with me with like the not the, like the really long inseam leather pants. That's a goal of mine. So if that can happen, thank you. But tell the fine folks that are listening about both Bodtober and Bodies Are Cool.
Sure. So Bodies Are Cool came first. That's a book that I put out in 2021, and it's a children's book. We aimed it at like for preschoolers, and it's basically just showing diversity in like hopefully almost every way you could think of. And the text is just repeating over and over again that bodies are cool. So the goal is like for little kids, even if they can't read yet, to be able to look at the pictures and see all these different kinds of bodies And there's never any one body that's singled out on a page. The pages are all lots of people kind of. When I was pitching the book, I said I wanted it to be a little bit like Where's Waldo? Obviously, it's not nearly as like meticulous as that, but where there's like lots of places that your eye can go. Because I've seen how diet culture has affected people close to me, has affected just the world in general. And I know that there's this time when we're little before we start absorbing those messages where we think of bodies as just neutral, like, oh, my friend has curly hair and I have straight hair, like that's fun. And I really wanted to like bring that feeling home. So then Bodtober was this little drawing challenge I made for myself in October, sort of an offshoot of Bodies Are Cool, where each day I would draw a body with a different specific physical feature. So did C-section scars and cochlear implants and cellulite and just all kinds of features and like highlighting them in a really loving way.
I mean, again, I'm just looking for like that theme of like Rob's disappearing eyes, like when these glasses come off. It's like, yeah, this body is cool as well. This guy's eyes disappear.
Used to say that having small eyes is weird. Like people have all different size eyes.
Exactly. And yeah, it's definitely one of those things. I usually ask this question to folks, like, how do you get back to that childlike wonder and some of the things that we're conditioned out of? And it seems that that work is doing a piece of it, of being able to go back to before we got hit with all of these different things. You start thinking about the conditioning, and it's like, hey, you big, you should play sports. It's like, I want to write. Nah, you should play sports. Hit some weights and creatine. And I was like, this is irresponsible. And not that, anybody was doing that or, in that way, but it was definitely these sort of pushes. And, but I think, there has to be a kid that has a similar story that I may have experienced. And sort of your work being in the hands of someone before, they encounter it and just that's who they are now, or that's what they have to cope with and address now, and give them these weird sort of ways of going about navigating life. I think, quote unquote, getting them early is really important because, when we get to high school, when we get to middle school,
Oh, middle school is even worse than high school.
I refuse to take. I remember the summer before going to high school, I'm wrapping up middle school. I talked to my older cousin and I'm like, yo, do you really have to take a shower like after gym at school? Because, like I got moves and I don't want to get in the shower because, my body. And then realizing it wasn't that, but it was a real fear. It was definitely an anxiety thing. And, pieces of it are still there. So those things last forever, but I think if there's a counter to that narrative or to that messaging, like in bodies are cool or have you, it helps. I think that helps a lot, especially getting in the hands of young folks. So shout out to you.
Thank you. I've heard from like some parents who got the book for their little kids, and their parents, so the little kids' grandparents are reading the book with them, and the parents will say like, "Oh, I overheard my mom reading about how fat bodies are good. Like that's really going to show her." Because I think like even though the book is aimed at little kids, I think everyone could benefit from just accepting that all bodies are good. You don't need to be singling people out or making people feel bad.
Yeah, it's really good. So I got one last real question, and this kind of goes into this theme. I think I've planned things before. I don't know what I do. So let's talk about your recent book, Are You Mad at Me? It's co-written with your sister, right? So you explore social anxiety, the theme of social anxiety through Opal the Ostrich's story. It's good. I like it. So what inspired the sort of collaboration with your sister and sort of this narrative, lighthearted yet impactful, and coping with the noodles. I like it. I like it. And like, and really, you know, what are your hopes? I detect a theme, but what are your hopes as far as the audience and the reader? So how did like the genesis of it coming together, and what are your hopes as far as the impact?
So the book came about because initially I was trying to work on another graphic memoir. I had put out Dancing at the Pity Party, which is about my mom dying, and I was trying to do another one that was in a similar vein but was about mental health. I have anxiety and I've had it like forever. And I was really struggling while I was working on it. I just felt like my ideas were feeling unoriginal, and Dancing at the Pity Party had been received pretty well, and so I was really scared of like going downhill with my next book. So I'd been like venting about this so much with my sisters, like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing, like no one's gonna like it. And Cody said to me, you should just write a book called Are You Mad at Me? Because I kept worrying that my agent or my publisher were mad at me for kind of dragging my feet on this other book. And I like stopped for a second and I was like, wait a minute, like say more. And we
Go
started
on.
thinking about it more and more. It fully started as a joke. And the more we thought about it, we were thinking about that book, Are You My Mother, where this little bird is going around to different animals saying, are you my mother? And we're like, what if it's an animal going around and saying, are you mad at me to all these different people? So what it ended up being is this ostrich whose last name is Feather. My last name is Feather. So can imagine how we came up with that. And she's trying to run this errand for her family, and she keeps running into different animals and worrying that they're mad at her. And each time they're not, and it's for a different like animal related reason. So like her friend who's a bat says, I was just grouchy because I'm nocturnal and it's the middle of the day, or like the penguins seem like they're all huddling together to exclude her, but that's actually how they keep warm in the snow. Because I think adults can really like sort of dismiss the worries of little kids because it's like, oh, you're a kid, like your life is not like you don't really have anything to worry about as a kid. You're just worried about going to school or whatever. But as an adult with anxiety, when I think back on my memories when I was in elementary school, the anxiety I remember feeling then felt the same as the anxiety I feel now. It was just that the context was different. And so Cody and I wanted to make a book to kind of like validate those little kids who may be feeling that way and are kind of like unheard by adults, kind of show them that, like, you're gonna be okay. Like, no one actually was mad at the ostrich. It's all right.
Good. And thank you again. You know, doing the good work. I mean, it's important. You know, I was a kid that would have these different feelings, be upset about things. It's like, you shouldn't have those. You're a boy, or you're too big for all of that, or whatever the thing would be. So you get the double, you know, the double down. And you know, now having sort of this protective ability as an adult, but still having those feelings. I'm like, nah, and I'm gonna make you feel stupid about it. I'm gonna have those feelings and make you feel stupid. Questioning my feelings 30 years later. But yeah, it's I think it's important to have that, and you know, have that's sort of like represented and acknowledged. You know, and I think as we get older and as adults, just it's not their fault. It's not there. It's, you know, sometimes it's generational. Sometimes it's just we don't talk about these things. And now that we have more of awareness and more like sort of like society's kind of caught up, I guess, and being more open to talking about this and that these different complex feelings, these big feelings, you know, we're able to have work that speaks to it and that maybe provides it in a creative and an interesting way that can definitely capture folks and hook folks early on, that it's at least part of how they think and part of how they mature.
Yeah, I think like social emotional learning has really been pushed in schools in the last like decade or something. One of my sisters is an elementary school teacher, and kids are learning to like take deep breaths and all these different things that like, man, that's so helpful. If someone had just taught me that stuff when I was little, I would have saved a lot of time and stress.
100%. I have done some teaching stuff, and I was working with a school that I may potentially teach with, and I was there for a visit, and it was a Wednesday, and they had on the intercom, and I was like, intercoms exist. I was like, I'm sure I did this as a kid. And they were having like a 5-minute mindfulness break.
Oh my God.
And I was just like, this did not exist. This is huge. It, you know, we were in the middle of a meeting, so it was, you know, for the context of what we're doing, a little disruptive, but I was just like, no, this is very important. Mm-hmm. I remember like cramming, having the anxiety for tests and all of these different things. And, you know, and you have bullying and all of this stuff that happens, you know, young, and it's based on differences. And I guess, and oh, I don't like you because you're, you know, whatever. And I think having something that counters, as I touched on before, it's just important.
What I'm trying to do.
Well, again, like I said, shout out to you. So I want to move into this sort of last portion. This is the portion where all of the friendships that I create in these podcasts, they fall apart. This is a rapid fire.
Oh, no.
all right. So, you know, as I always tell folks, do not overthink these. And I already can tell you're going to overthink it because I do the same thing. But don't overthink these.
Don't overthink to me is like just in one ear and out the other.
But don't breathe, Rob.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a judgment-free zone. I'll put it that way. And okay. The response is, it's like, look, I said what I said. That's just what it is, you know? All right. So I got four of them for you. It might be five, but it's at least four. So here's the first one. What is your favorite shade of pink? Because I read this somewhere that, of course, your favorite color is pink. So I modified this question.
That's not a scary question. I like to call it ballet pink. It's like the color of ballet slippers, like really light and a little peachy.
Okay. See, the fact that you had an answer for that, because I was like, pink is pink. I'm like, nah, not for a person who likes pink.
That's where you're wrong.
I mean, Barbie has a pink. It's a specific kind of pink.
It's pretty, but it's not my pink.
No, it's not my pink right there. I like sullen gray, you know?
Goes well with pink.
What was your favorite book growing up?
Oh, Ella Enchanted by Gail Carson Levine. I still read it. Sometimes my copy is like all falling apart. It's like a take on Cinderella. They made it into a movie, but the movie is not good and like has nothing in common with the book.
Shots.
Sorry.
I was like, the movie, it's not good.
The movie is fine as a movie, but to think that it's supposed to be the same story as the book, it's just like no overlap there.
As a movie, sure. As an adaptation, not so much.
Yeah, exactly.
What was the last movie you watched?
I watched Good Grief on Netflix. It's Dan Levy's new movie. It's about his partner dying. Big surprise. I like watching stuff about people dying. But it was good. Yeah.
I think it's on the watch list because my partner's a big Dan fan. And we watched his brunch show. And on HBO, which I was just like, I'm sitting there, I'm a food nerd. And I'm like, man, this brunch is whack. the last two movies I watched, and I'm saying this because I think it's kind of funny. It was one I was sitting for a while. I finally watched Knives Out, which I enjoyed. Thought it was a little long, but enjoyed it. And the other one was Saltburn because, you know, tubs.
You know? I haven't watched it. But I have read the Wikipedia plot.
This is the last question I got for you. Because always, again, you know, this ties back into process a little bit. What are the three tools that you use most often during the day? Like for me, obviously, it's a mic. It's, you know, recording interface, things like that. And wine, red wine these days. For you, what would be the three tools that you use most often to create?
I don't know if this counts as one or two, but my iPad and Apple Pencil, that's that's the main thing that I use to draw. When I started out putting art online, I would like draw it on paper and then I would scan it with this app on my phone and then try to put it into a program on my computer and like fiddle with it. And it was really complicated because if anyone ever wanted edits, I'd have to like draw the thing that they wanted changed and then scan that in. And it was this whole involved thing. And then I had a different kind of tablet, but this is like the best thing I've ever used. I use the app Procreate.
Nice.
And it's amazing. I'm trying to think. I got into bullet journaling a few years ago. So I have like a notebook and I have this big thing of markers. I don't make physical media as much as I would like to. But whenever I do, it feels really good. Although I get frustrated because I'm left-handed. So I end up with like paint or ink or whatever all over my hands. But yeah, I guess that's three.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lefty. I like it. So, That's pretty much it for the, we got a lot covered, I think. That's pretty much it for the podcast and the questions and all. So, I guess I'll do my closeout. One, I want to thank you so much for coming on and making the time to be here on this podcast with us. And two, I want to invite and encourage you to share with the listeners, you know, the Etsy store, the website, all of the places. It is shameless plug time.
Yes. The best place you can follow me is on Instagram. That's where I like post links to whatever I'm doing. My Instagram account is just Tyler Feder, TYLERFEDER. I have an Etsy shop called Roaring Softly. Right now it's roaringsoftly.com. I may be switching to a different platform, so I can't say how long that's going to still be that. But, and then I started a Ko-fi. Yeah. I looked up how to say it online and it said it rhymes with no fee. So Ko-fi. And I like basically all my stuff is either under Tyler Feder or Roaring Softly. But yeah, Instagram, Etsy, Ko-fi.
Ko-fi. I like it. I have one. I'm just like, yo, buy me Ko-fi because I drink. Yeah. I don't know. And there you have it, folks. I want to again thank Tyler Feder for coming on to the podcast and sharing a bit of her journey and, you know, giving us a little bit more. So for Tyler Feder, I'm Rob Lee saying that there is art, culture, and community in and around your neck of the woods. You just got to look for it.